Blog Talk Radio.
Not to worry.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You once again, I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 3145. That's 3145. And our telephone number here is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. Okay. Tonight we're going to have a very, very good guest. Her name is Laura West and she's from Halifax, actually Nova Scotia. That's where she's from. And she's going to be telling us about her story. She's going to tell her story, how she grew up and what she had to go through. And then also, too, she's going to mention how she found recovery. And believe me, honey, she went through all kinds of stuff here, counselors and psychologists and therapists and so forth and so on. And today I think she's probably well on her way into her healing journey. And she's going to explain that stuff later on. And there is hope. See, this is the thing. There is hope. When people go through all kinds of stuff in their lives, all kinds of abuse, you know, then there is hope for them to heal. Now, I'm going to read the mission statement. We have a singleness of purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. Number one is educating the public, and especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. Boy, is that a heavy. Presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. Offering hope for healing to numerous pairs and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, prevention is something that I really, really lean on heavily. People know this. I can do a whole show easily alone on prevention, intervention, and recovery because it's that important, okay? So what I'm trying to get across to you is it's something that today especially, since all the stats have gone way high, okay, much higher than before with child abuse and all different kinds of abuses, it's something where parents have to get more involved. They have to learn. They have to absolutely learn how to talk to their children about the good, the bad, and the ugly. That's the way I word it, okay, because there's a lot more of it out there. Of children being kidnapped and all kinds of stuff. So anyway, okay, enough of that. We do have a wonderful guest. Like I said, her name is Laura West, and we have Lori on board. She's my co-host. Yes, she is. And I see Bill is here also. Bill is here to, I'll be asking him questions off and on. He's always working behind the scenes. He's always so busy, and I never know when to ask him a question, but I'll take pokes at it. Okay, and and I'll let you know when I'm going to talk to him. So, all right, so everybody's on hold right now for some reason. Lori, you shouldn't be. Let me see. There, can you hear me? Laura?
I can hear you, yes.
Okay, so we have Laura and we have Lori. Okay, I'm going to have both of your mics open. Okay. And Bill, I will call on him several times throughout the show. Okay, so this is not a hard show to do. Yes, it can become emotional. We will have feelings. And you wouldn't be normal if you didn't have feelings. So not to worry, all right, not to worry. Laura, why don't you start telling us your story? Go ahead.
Okay. Well, my beef started extremely young. I was my first memory is when I was four. I was given a glass of urine to drink, which is like, what? It's a little crazy. But it was actually my older brother who decided that he needed to have some kind of power over me. And it was never corrected by my parents. So, you know, we were latchkey kids growing up, and we always lived in rural areas and rural trailer parks and things like that. And so he had like a good 2 to 3 hours. It was, you know, 2 to 3 hours between the time the bus would drop us off at school after school to the time that my parents would come home when the beatings would end. But, I mean, I believe he must have had, you know, maybe some kind of Asperger's or autism or, you know, something that caused this violent behavior. Because I have ADHD, and I believe I'm borderline personality disorder. And I think I may also have some autistic traits as well, which I'm so curious about learning more about, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Very curious about it. Yeah, what they are and things like that. Anyway, so it was brutal. Like, I mean, it's from the age of four, you know, it would started with the urine, and it just kept going up from there. I just remember constantly being brutalized, like beaten, choked, held down, tied up. You know, I would have serrated, you know, blade knives to my throat. I'd be hogtied so that if I moved, I would be, you know, I'd choke myself, right? My blood would be all over the living room floor because he'd smash my face into, you know, these hardwood coffee table that my parents had had. The bathroom door would be broken down while he's trying to get at me, urinate all my face, smash my face into the porcelain toilet, like just brutal, brutal, brutal beating. Every day, like every day. I remember many, many times running out into the snow, into, you know, in Timmins or in these northern towns, these northern mining towns, grades 4, 5, 6, 7, running out into the snow and just hiding, trying to create a fort, like a snow fort, and trying to hide in the snow fort until it was, you know, for 3 hours until 6 o'clock hit, so that I would try and avoid the beatings. The worst thing about it was that I would always get in trouble. It would be my fault that my blood was all over the floor, that the bathroom door was broken down, or, you know, or that, you know, because it was my responsibility. So my parents would come home after work, and if all the housework wasn't done and all my chores weren't done, you know, and I'd say it's because he hit me, or I'd have bruises. He really learned how to hide, you know, how to hit me so that the bruises wouldn't show on my face and stuff like that, generally, you know. So a lot of the beatings were down sort of below on the chest, punching my chest into my stomach, things like that.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, and I mean, I'm not having an emotional reaction right now because I've been able to detach the connection between the emotion and the action. So that connection is no longer there because your brain doesn't know the difference between yesterday, today, and tomorrow, right? Yeah. And so now it knows. I can say this, and it's something terrible that happened to me. But I don't have the same physical reactions because I've disconnected the neurotransmitters that are connecting, that used to connect, you know, to that pain and trauma. It, like, oh, it's going to happen again. Oh, my God. You know, your brain going into that panic and recreating, you know, the scenario from any trigger, right? So, like, when I would be at work, if my boss literally stood up and came up and talked to me, I would start, like, trembling and shaking, and I would turn white and I turn ice cold, and all of the blood would come up from my extremities into protect my, you know, inner organs. And so I'd turn ice cold and I'd start to stutter and I couldn't think and I'd be looking for exits. I mean, it was just pure PTSD, complex PTSD trauma.
Absolutely.
And I could never really hold down a job because of this connection of an authority figure and the beating, right? It was very, very challenging for my life, yeah. So that was many, many things. And I,
well, yeah, I'm just sitting here thinking, see, so many of us on NASCA have been horribly beaten too, right?
Yeah, I'm sure. It happens every day.
Yeah.
Every day.
And
I know
it does. It's disgraceful, all right? And mm-hmm. if you come from a family where the parents don't really care, or they, they're just too busy with themselves or whatever to really, you know,
yeah.
go into the details. Hey, what happened? I mean, what's going on here? And why did you have to hit her? And things like that. If that doesn't happen, then that type of behavior from him continues. And he's
well,
having
they
himself
the
a good
blueprint,
old time.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. They created the
yeah.
blueprint. They said, oh, here you go. This is okay. You go mm-hmm. ahead and get your frustrations out by continuing to beat this, you know, this little child for years and years to come. And even, you know, if my dad came home and I had a black eye, which did happen on occasion, or my nose, you know, like if he smashed my face into the coffee table and my blood was everywhere, obviously my nose is going to be swollen up, right?
Of course.
Yeah, but my dad never, not one, not until the day my mother died when I was 16, well, after that, did my dad actually take any kind of protective act. Before that, it was always my fault. So he had, you know, when you look into your history and you look into your heritage, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he has a huge issue with women. And his mother was an alcoholic. My grandmother was an alcoholic. And I remember all the crazy things. Like, well, I didn't see her very much. You know, we didn't see her a lot. But when I did see her, I remember falling asleep on the couch and she coming home from work from the bar because she was a barmaid. And she'd come home from work from the bar at 2 o'clock in the morning and wake me up off the couch and say, hey, there's a fight going on down at the Robin's Donuts, you know, in the parking lot. We got to go see and put me in the car. I'd be like, I don't know, 10 or 11.
Nah.
Yeah, so, you know, there's like this this trauma kind of behavior or whatever that passes on. So I know that he definitely did not like women at all. And so whether he consciously thought it or unconsciously, you know, subconsciously, I was the bad one because I was female. I must have
yeah.
done something. So he would, when he came home, the first words out of his mouth, if he knew, you know, if something was wrong, was, what did you do to make him so mad? And then
right.
I would go to bed without supper.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So it was very crazy. So you learn very, very young. You know, you learn, I learned helplessness. Doesn't matter what I do, I'm not going to get anything I need, right? You learn very, very young that nobody's going to hear you or listen to you. You're not going to get anything that you need, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or me, I need. You know, I learned that very, very young. So it took a long time to unprogram that, to deprogram that natural thought process. That was, my brain developed to actually believe that I could actually make some action, you know, reaction out of an action that was positive.
I understand where you're coming from. Many of us here, you know, understand that. A lot of us came from backgrounds. I'm going to put Lori on in a second. You know, where the boy child was fine. He was the prince, okay? And the girl child was a nothing, really basically a nothing. And my abuse was, one of my many, many abuses was from my brother also. And he didn't beat me up. No, he sexually abused me. And that was okay because this happens in families, okay? So I had to put up with that for quite a few years. And it wasn't okay. I knew it wasn't okay. I wasn't a stupid kid. I was an abused kid. And this is where many of us come from. You see, whether it be physical abuse, you're being beaten, or whether you're being sexually abused, or whether you're being emotionally, you know, abused, or whatever the case might be, or terribly neglected. Some of us go through all of that, okay? And,
absolutely.
Yeah, you have the complex, the complex post-traumatic stress disorder certainly does, you know, that's a big deal part of it. I mean, we this is why we suffer until we heal, until we get onto the healing journey, as we like to call it here at NASCA. I'm gonna put Lori on and see if she has a question or wants to make a comment. Go ahead, Lori.
I'm glad you're on here. You're doing really well. I know this is kind of nerve-wracking at times, especially after the horror that you've gone through. You are going to trigger it. I had a brother, too, that was extremely violent. I know the reason that he was. He was actually starved for the first 3 months of his life. It's from total neglect.
Yes.
He liked to hurt people. And mm-hmm. I was, I don't know, maybe 2 years old, and the first thing he did, he threw me downstairs, a flight of stairs, every day, several times a day. If he spotted you, he was going to come attack you. And you're living in horror. And in my case, my parents were actually at home when all this was going on, and they did nothing. They didn't care what he did to me. And then it was my sister, like 3 years later. They ignored it, you know. But when you're a little kid, you don't understand that, you know, he's got brain damage or he's got a psychological problem and whatnot, because you haven't learned that part yet. You just know that you're in a state of panic all the time, hiding out. You and your fort. I used to go into the woods next door to try to get away from him. And I actually found a lot of dead animals that he would kill in those woods. So at that time, you're in pure terror. You know, you can only function as a child. You don't know to function as an adult because there haven't been any steps taught to you. But it is frustrating, and I know how frustrating it is when your parents didn't react to you. You know, it's not fair to you at all, and they did damage. I mean, you could have been doing childhood things, having some fun, if they would at least one time listen to you or stay home one day and watch, because they knew something was wrong with him. They're just blaming it on you because you're the only one who was, like, able to, like, understand what they were saying. Not that they didn't know. What he was doing couldn't be hidden from them. So I feel very, so sorry for what you did and how they ignored you. But I am glad when you say I can hear the progression, you know, that you've made, that you can disconnect and whatnot. So you've made progress, and that's a good thing.
Well, because, you know, that's another point, right, is that it's a physical connection in your brain. It's like a muscle. So if you can tap into it and then disconnect the connection that was born out of that experience, our brain develops as children, right? Like, and makes that connection, and it's a physical connection. So it takes it doesn't take like affirmations and all that kind of stuff. You just got to talk to your inner child or your inner, you know, inner person that is controlling the brain and change how it sees the situation. So the biggest thing is to know or tell the, like the way I look at it, you know, you get a little, I got my little bunny by my bed here, you know, and I look at my little bunny is my inner kid. And I did this for years and it really helped. And I told my little bunny, you know, that person, say my boss, you know, wasn't there to hurt me. It's okay. I know you're scared. You know, this boss reminds you of the time when, you know, right? The memory that comes up that created the trigger, and then deactivate the trigger. Nope. This is a different person. This is a different situation, and it's a different time. This person is here to help you. He wants you to, you know, be successful at your job. This is not the same as that, and I'm here to take care of you now. And by doing that little trick, it's a little brain trick. You can actually tell your brain to disconnect that connection for the PTSD. So no longer do I shake and shiver and completely turn ice cold when anybody in a position of authority or especially in like an officer's uniform or even a security uniform, it doesn't send me into that state anymore. I'm not going to say it's gone for like completely. Obviously, there's still a little trigger there because I don't think I can get my brain to go back to as if it didn't happen, you know. But boy, oh boy, you know, if I hadn't spent tens of thousands of dollars and all of that time searching and searching and seeking, I never would have found those little brain hacks to disconnect that. And I would still be suffering from the exact same thing. So it's quite interesting how you can reprogram your brain because it's, you know, it's neuroplastic, it moves, it's a muscle. You can change all the connections.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you did a wonderful job of compartmentalizing because that's actually what it is, you know, all these different parts you got to put it on. And as time goes by, all these new things that come, it goes more back into your brain, more compartmentalizing. And triggers, you sound like you're actually able to bring yourself out of one, have that safety net. When you know something is triggered, this is what you do to get yourself back on track. That's really admirable.
Well, the triggers don't happen anymore because those neurotransmitters aren't connected anymore. I've deactivated them. They're not connected anymore. They're connected to a different thing, a different thought, a different process.
Well, that sounds wonderful.
It's not like a compartmentalization. It's actually a deactivation of the actual trigger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand that. I get it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I do.
It's like two fingers, you know, you connect your fingers to that one thought or whatever, right? Oh, something bad is going to happen. And you can literally disconnect those and put together two new neurotransmitters that go, oh, well, nothing, you know, maybe something bad could happen, but probably it's not going to happen, right? And so then you can go on a different thought path, which means that now your hypothalamus isn't, you know, surging out all that cortisol and adrenaline to get you going, right? And the thought is like, oh, well, hang on, let's see what this person wants or, you know, how can we help? As opposed to, oh, my God, I'm going to die. Right?
Let me say something about that. You're talking to Miss Panic Child here. And I used to have such terrible panic disorder. Oh, and Lori knows all this. But it was so bad that it actually was debilitating. Okay, it was debilitating. It was ruling my life. I didn't want to go places, or if I did go places, I'd drink. I'd make sure that I had to have a crutch. I had to have something, right? This is before I got over all this stuff. And because I didn't have the ability to go out, and I mean actually the ability, all right? I was scared. Now, I also like to sing. I'm a very good singer, and I sang in New York City in bands and stuff. And so I'd get drunk, but I couldn't get too drunk because then I'd forget the words, wouldn't I? That happened one night. I can laugh at it now. So I had to gauge how much alcohol I could drink before I actually got up and performed. And I did well. I did very well. But the point is this. We are so overcome so many times by all of these things that happen to us that we have to find some sort of safety net. Now, your safety net is detachment from, you know, the actual act of itself and the feelings that you have. And that's very good that you're able to do that. I'm really glad you're able to do that. I can honestly say.
I just think you're using the wrong terminology, though. You know what I mean?
Go
it's
ahead.
Not actually detachment, because I was detached.
What is it?
That's a different state of being. You know what I mean? This is
okay.
Literally disconnecting the neurotransmitter that creates the thought that you're going to die. It literally
right.
disconnects it. It's not
right.
a detachment. Detachment is, like, because I was detached, I tell you, because I used to actually... when he was beating me by the time I was 13, because it would be hours-long ritualistic torture. I mean, he had a wood-burning set. He would use that on me. I mean, there was just so many things. Like, I can't even, you know, there was just so many. He had a, you know, he got a rifle, one of those pellet guns. He used that on me. I mean, it just never ended, all the things that he did. But what I've literally done is so when I did detach, I actually felt like I was leaving my body, you know, doing that transcendental
right.
meditation, because I remember floating up and watching him beat me. And there was one time when he left the room and I wanted to get back into my body so I could get out, but I wasn't quick enough. And I ended up not being able to get out until, you know, and he continued to do whatever the hell he was doing to me. But this is not detachment. This is not that. It's
all right,
different.
Now use
it's
it.
Actually,
all right,
you know,
use, yeah, go ahead. Explain what you're saying here, because I want to see what
okay,
you're talking
so
about. Go ahead.
When your brain is developing when you're a child, right,
that's
you get
right.
connections in your brain that connect from your experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
An experience creates a thought. Okay, the stove is hot. If I put my finger on the stove, I'm going to burn my hand. Right?
Right.
So that connection. So then if you put your two fingers together and visualize it, the connection is the stove is hot. Okay, move your hand away from the stove. Don't touch the stove. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But what if the stove isn't hot? It's a not hot stove. Right? Now you have to reprogram your brain to believe, to have a different belief that the stove is no longer hot. Right? And so you can reprogram it from experience and from, like, I don't want to use the word talk therapy, but it's basically retelling yourself or retelling your inner child that this stove isn't hot, so you can touch the stove, it's okay. And so you can disconnect the belief that stoves are hot and reconnect a different connection to stoves. A different thought connection. And that new thought connection becomes a new automatic thought. It's your new automatic way of living.
I like that, and I understand what you're saying. However, the stove at one time would burn you if you did touch it, if it was turned on. So, but if it's not turned on, then therefore it's not going to hurt you.
Oh, it was just an example, though. You know what I
yeah.
mean? Like, it was, I didn't
yeah.
know what else to
Well, that's
think
all right. I understand. I
yeah.
understand. Okay,
but it
so
means,
we
it
talk
means you
about...
can literally reprogram your brain. Like, it's all over the new psychology, all over the,
yes.
all the psychology today and all the books. We can rewire our brain. So
yes.
it literally is not detachment. It isn't detachment. Detachment is where
right.
you know, completely block everything out. This is different. You're creating new thought patterns that are
right.
automatic, that have
yes.
a different result for your body. So instead of my body now going, like turning ice cold and sending out all that adrenaline and cortisol, making me
right.
crazy, like I got to get out of here and something bad is going to happen and start shaking and I'm cold, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now the new automatic thought is, oh, I'm safe. It's okay. You know, this person's just coming up to me because they want to tell me what I need. They're going to give me a parking ticket or whatever, right? Like this person in a suit or an authority thing. I don't turn ice cold anymore. It's literally deactivating the two neurotransmitter connections
That's
to the thought that that person walking up to me is going to kill me, right?
That's the
yeah.
word right there. Yes. Deactivating.
Which one?
deactivating.
Yeah, deactivating it. And yes. then you re
now
and then you
activate
sense. A new thought. Yeah, you
right.
activate a new thought. So now
right.
the new thought, and it's natural. It's all in your subconscious. Like you're not even, it's not a conscious thought. You're not, I'm not programming it. I'm not sitting there. I've changed it already. I changed it physically in my brain by that little process. And I know it sounds stupid. It sounds so ridiculous and
no,
flighty.
It doesn't sound stupid at all.
But
it's like, look, what you're doing is you're addressing the problem, okay? And you're addressing it, you're seeing it, and you're deactivating yourself from the feelings of the problem. Before you were ice cold, and now you're not ice cold anymore. So you've actually
because
overcome.
Your brain, yeah,
right,
exactly. Uh-huh. Your brain thinks, your brain doesn't know the difference between yesterday, today, and tomorrow. So as far as it's concerned, this person in a position of authority coming up towards you is about to kill you, right?
Uh-huh.
That's the old connection. And then you
right.
just reprogram that connection. You deactivate that one and put in a new one.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah.
That's then. That's that specific situation, that specific person. That's not going to happen now. Yeah. And
see,
so now
like
the new
that.
Automatic.
I like that. I like that word because it makes sense, okay, what you were saying before. I mean, I can see that because when people – I used to work in Greystone. I saw all kinds of stuff. I was a technician there.
What's
so
Greystone?
Oh, I was a psychiatric hospital. And we had all kinds of, I was a state certified technician there, and I worked with the psychiatrist. Now, what you're talking about is you're deactivating, what you're doing, you're looking at the problem, like I said before, and you're able to separate it in the sense that you're deactivating it. And you're actually putting in scenarios here. This person isn't going to hurt me anymore, and even though it may have happened before with someone else of authority, this person might just be giving me a ticket. You see, they used it as that. So I understand what you're doing. If it works for
yeah.
you, that's wonderful. And I get it. I get it. So, yeah, okay. So let me ask you something. When you look back at your brother, I don't know if you talked to him today, do you?
Oh, no.
I didn't think so. I don't talk to mine either. No. If he came to my door, I'd probably hit him in the head with a baseball bat. That's how I am. Go ahead. I have nothing to do with my brother. Oh, no. Because he's one of the people who harmed me, you know. And as far as I don't get triggered by him anymore. And one time I couldn't even talk about what he did to me, even on this show. There was no way that
yeah.
I could. You can ask Bill. And because it was too much a part in some, it was part of my problem, you know, that I couldn't deactivate it. I was too much in the turmoil of it. So I had to separate it. I had to, detach from it. And that's what I've done with all the people who abused me, is to put them in a different part. People have heard me say this before, a different part of my brain. Because, okay, if I want to tap into that, I can. But I don't really care to. However, I can. And I don't think about it, and it doesn't define my life anymore.
Yeah.
Okay, so
well,
it
I think one of the what one of the kind of tricks or brain hacks to that, you know, that
mm-hmm.
little saying I was saying, right? What you say to the little inner
mm-hmm.
child
mm-hmm.
is that the part of it that where you say, this reminds you of the time when. So what you're doing is you're taking a specific situation
mm-hmm.
that your brain is being, that's the trigger that your brain is being reminded of, thinking that's going to happen again with this new person, right? This new situation.
Right.
And every time you do that with those memories,
mm-hmm.
then that specific memory gets deactivated because you're
mm-hmm.
telling your brain, oh, I know what you're upset about, right? I know what you're automatically thinking about. You think that because of that situation,
mm-hmm.
this situation is the same.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not. You don't have to worry about it. I'm going to take care of this, you know, me, the grown-up person now. I'm going to take care of this. This isn't the same as that, you know. I know you're scared, and that's okay. And that's the whole crazy thing. Then that memory...
Mm-hmm.
becomes gone. Like not the memory itself, but the physical reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, like
exactly.
but kind of. I mean, more like the physical reaction to it.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
maybe somebody walks up to you, like for me especially, it's anybody in a position of authority. It could be male, female, especially uniforms. I don't know why it was that, but whenever they would walk up to me, it was I had to deactivate the triggers of when I was hogtied, when I was, you know, getting choked, when I was, my face was being smashed into the coffee table, like all of these things, just stepped on or what have you, right?
Otherwise, you can't live. Like, I'll give you an example.
Every one of those memories got, I was able to say, oh, hey, well, you know, I know that happened to you during that time, but that's not going to happen. That, you know, that situation is different from this one. So that specific memory, every single one of those specific memories, so I had to do it a lot. I had to do it a lot. But every one of those specific memories eventually got deactivated, and my brain was then pre-programmed to think a different way, which means like the underlying thought, the subconscious thought that, that ends up making the body, you know, surge cortisol and the adrenaline.
Right.
Instead, it it doesn't surge those out. You know what I mean? As like it just it's a physical reaction that's so different now. But it took years, like, honestly. I mean, I'm 57 now, so, you know, I've spent probably 30 years trying to find that easy. I think 20 years for sure, 25, trying to find the keys, you know, because there's so many out there that are like, oh, yes, well, do this with the red light thing. What's that called? The red light one?
I know what you're talking about. But you,
yeah,
let me say something here. I'm going to say something to you. You're finally going to get to the point in your life. And by the way, 57 isn't terribly old. I just want you to know that. Okay.
No.
But you're going to get to the point in your life where I chose to write a book, okay, on my memoirs. And people said to me, wasn't that emotional for you? Didn't that trigger you? Didn't you have terrible feelings? Did it make you, you know, go back and into memory and all this other stuff, all the things you went through when you were a kid, right? And I said, no. I had absolutely, absolutely no emotion when I wrote that book. None. I was able to write it. I felt nothing. I felt like I was looking down at some kid, some poor kid who was going through all of this stuff, you know, in her life.
Yeah.
And I had no emotion, except maybe feeling sorry for the kid, but I mean, I had no emotion about the actual act of itself. So that's when you want to call it detachment or whatever you want to call it, maybe not detachment, but whatever. I have nothing left of feelings towards anything that happened to me as a child. It's gone. That was yesterday. I don't have any
And
more
so
panic.
you don't have any, like when somebody walks up to you or there's something, you know, there's a smell or anything like that, right? Those triggers no longer are triggers. They don't activate the protection mechanism, the protection connection. Yeah.
No. I got over that a long time ago, thank God, because I wrote my book 12 years ago. Yeah, I wrote my book 12 years ago. And it was before that I came to that point. So what I'm trying to say here is I think no matter what we go through, okay, I'm not saying that you can't feel sadness at times, that your life wasn't different, you know what I'm saying? Because let's face it, if we didn't go through all of that stuff, our life would have been different maybe, right? And maybe we could have had better time. Yeah, we could have had better times in our life. And we could have had, we could have had good memories instead of bad memories. However, even just looking at that, it's still, I never get triggered. Not anymore. No.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
So you do reach that point where, yes, you can have empathy for children that are going through it. You can have empathy for adults who never healed from it. Absolutely. Because you've been there, but you still don't have that same feeling because you have healed from it. And I think what's going on here from the way that you're speaking is that you found a way. Now, it says in your bio here That you went to counselors, you went to therapists, you went to all kinds of self-help books and 12-step groups explaining how my brain developed, and this is why what you're referring back to over there, what we were talking about before, and how and why getting hijacked when triggered, I learned life skills that I was never taught. And you've gone to psychiatrists and everything you can go to, you went to. Well, I was here. All right.
And
wasted, you know,
so much time, Carol.
Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. My gosh. You know,
that's
and
right.
Sometimes you learn one tiny little golden nugget and you walk out of there and that's like, oh, my God, that's amazing. And sometimes you walk out of there and they're going, for you just spent $2,000 to have, you know, a psychologist who's registered, right, designated,
mm-hmm.
supposed to be educated, having you run in your mind for every hour for five weeks.
Right.
You're like, what?
Mm-hmm.
How are you helping me? You're
right.
not helping me understand
right.
anything, you know? Yeah, craziness.
So this
like
is
there's
good.
Some real crazy guru weird stuff out there, you know, that you're like, what are you doing? So I wasted a lot of money, a lot of time trying to find, you know, and I found, I think I found these techniques more in outside of the, like the psychological, you know, the scientific route.
Mm-hmm.
These were all in the more Louise Hay, you know, more in the sort of the self-help books that I found these techniques
good
that I learned.
Books. Yeah, you must have found some good ones. Some people do benefit. I'm serious. Some people do benefit, you know, by going for therapy and all this other stuff and counselors.
Sometimes they can find,
that,
you can find a good therapist. Yeah, I never found a good
one
who ever really helped me. I had one therapist I remember paying, again, $200 an hour. And I mean,
right.
I wasn't a wealthy person. Like, I was barely surviving as a single mom and stressed all the time. Like, it was hard, you know. And my family never, they had no desire to help. You made your bed, you lie in it, you know. Like, as soon as
I moved out
at 17, as soon as I moved out of the house and I put myself to university, they're like, okay, you're gone, you're out, get out, you know, you're done. Like, yeah, it was like, yeah, there was no, it's not the kind of family that you see on TV, that's for sure. But
well, you know, like I used to tell
like,
myself too, if I was going to have a panic attack, you know what got me over my panic attacks? People don't understand this, but it works for me. That's all I can say. I was having one panic attack after another, and it was usually in stores. My mother used to humiliate me in stores. I think
oh
I know
God,
where
that
one came from.
Yes.
I
had
that.
One in the grocery store.
It's terrible. And it's terrible. You think you're dying. You think you're dying. You're sure of it.
Yeah.
So you rang the bell there because I thought I was dying. At that point, I didn't care if I did, all right? Hey, I'd rather die than go through this, all right? And but finally, all of a sudden, something changed in my brain. And I got so freaking mad, okay, at the panic attack because it was ruining my life, all right? This panic disorder was ruining my life. And I like to go out and do things. I'm like my mind is there anyway, even if I couldn't get my body there, all right? So I got so mad at my panic attack that it was actually stronger. My head must have been ready to burst. I'm serious. Than the panic attack. Now, that happened 3 times where I got mad, go away, you. I won't say these things on air, the words that I said in my head, all right? But you can just take a imagine. And it wasn't as if somebody was holding a .45 to my head, all right? Okay? It wasn't a thing like that. Come on. I mean, what the hell are you afraid of anyway? See, this is how I talk in my brain, and then other bad things, other bad words. And finally, they actually went away. And I didn't need the magic pill or anything else. I didn't need it. It went away. It went away. It went away. So you see, then I was able to live my life.
And you don't know how or why that worked. Like, you don't know. There's no sort of written, like, stuff about it or any kind of instruction about how that worked?
No. I was told to go.
That's amazing. I would never think of doing that.
I did have a panic attack
at a grocery store, and I remember everything went black. Like, it just went black. People were touching me. They were with the shopping carts, and they were shoulder rubbing me. And I just kept getting more and more like, I got to get out of here. I got to get out of here. And everything just kept going black, and I just kept seeing this little peek hole to try and find the exit, you know, like a little, like I was looking through a peephole trying to get out just because people were touching me. And that was just after I graduated from university.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, hypervigilance also, looking for exit signs all the time. See, that's what I used to do.
Yeah.
Even if I went into a restaurant, most people look for the ladies' room. I looked for the exit sign, right? Because I figured if I had a panic attack, I want to get out, because you want to get away from it. Whatever it is that's causing this panic attack, you don't even give a crap what it is at the time. You just want to get out and away from it. You know, and then maybe go to the ladies' room. I don't know, whatever. But, you know, it came second. The first thing was the exit sign. And that's how I ruled my life, wherever I went. I had to know where the exit sign was, because I could have a panic attack in front of people. You know, even in school, I could have it in I had so many panic attacks in high school. I walked out when I was 16, and I went and took my GED. Okay, what's the difference? I didn't care. I got my GED, and I passed with 17 more points than I needed. I wasn't a stupid kid. I was a sick kid. All right,
yeah.
I needed help, all right, of some kind. And my panic attack started when I was 9. They started when I was 9 and lasted until I was 49.
Wow.
That's a
long
time, honey. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me ask you something.
I only had maybe a couple more. I don't know why they stopped or why I didn't have more. I have no idea. I don't even understand why it came. I don't know anything about, but it was, I can at least say that I can have a sense of what somebody else experienced having like some panic attacks, just because I'd had a couple.
So you know what it feels like, the heart pounding, the terrible sweating, the mind boggling, and
everything
want to die.
Went black. That was the whole thing for me, is that everything went black and I couldn't see. Literally couldn't see. Everything was black. It was like I was looking down a funnel and trying to get out of the store. Yeah, that was the weirdest thing. And I don't know why it happened. It was just, I don't know.
It's from trauma,
but,
honey. It's from trauma.
But also, I feel like I think it was also because I just graduated from university and there was no work. Like, I couldn't find a job if my life depended on it, and I had no money. Mm-hmm. And I was like, as usual, broke, pretty much my whole life.
Well, that's traumatic.
Broken,
hold on
striving
a second.
And looking for something else.
Okay, hold on a second, honey. We have another phone call here. I just want to acknowledge him. Hold on. 661 area code. Who am I speaking to? Is this Philip?
Hi, this is Philip.
Yeah, it's you, right? Okay. Do you want to listen or do you want to? Do you have a comment to make or what?
I think I'll just listen, please.
You just want to listen right now? Okay. I don't know how long you've been there, because sometimes I close my eyes. Don't laugh at me. But I do. I close my eyes, and all of a sudden I'll look at the screen and go, oops, here's another telephone number, all right? Okay. So, but I'll get back to you, and then you can ask a question, okay?
Okay, thanks.
Okay, I'll put you on hold for right now. And let's see if Bill has something he'd like to say. Hold on a second. I'll open up his mic. Bill,
I know you're working, but
go ahead.
Yeah, I'm working, but I just want to, I think you're doing a great job with your telling of your story and so forth. I like how you've concentrated a significant amount of it so far on recovery. Because, it's not the problem. It's also the solution, And we want people to hear, various solutions. There are lots of paths to recovery, lots. And yours is what it is. So it's nice to hear the various paths, whatever they are for, I guess. And then, after that, hear how it went, how well did it go, and you know, whether they would have changed or not. Sounds like you were pretty satisfied. So, thank you so much for coming here all the way from Nova Scotia. Did you have to like swim or anything? I don't know. It's kind of cold up here too. Hey, by the way,
so frozen. I just walked across the ice field.
Yeah, you mentioned Timmins.
Oh my God!
I bet you nobody else heard that or knows what you were. Man, Timmins is a small town up in Ontario, and it's near what's the other one? Sudbury.
No, Calgary. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Calgary. No. Mm-hmm.
Sudbury.
Sudbury.
Yeah, they're mining towns.
You say it that way, okay.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, there's a giant nickel in the town square. Giant.
He knows the giant nickel.
he knows the size about of a house. Yeah.
It's the size of a house. Anyway, thank you so much for being here. You're doing a great job. I won't take more of your time, but I did want to say thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm so glad to do this. It's exciting.
Yeah. See, I told you you'd be happy. I told you, see? That's the way it usually is. I'm going to go back to Lori, and see if she has something she wants to ask or make a comment about. Go ahead.
I find actually the way that you do what you're doing really interesting. Because just like futuristic kind of stuff. I'm old school, you know, older, not dating anymore, my age. But I went through the process the old-fashioned way. I got to a place where either the things that were said about me throughout the family, I mean, these are going on 2 generations from now, I found out they were still telling stories about me. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm not even the person that they were, and why are they telling stories to strangers about me? Like, don't they have anything else to do? They don't understand that people don't stay in the same place in their head, no matter what therapy they use to move on with. I did the old-fashioned ways. My son was born. I took him away from the family because I didn't want him around the people. And the absence of being around the people really diffused the anger in me from everything that happened. I went and I saw a therapist that I wanted to help with a certain problem. I did it that way. And I journaled for a while. And then I had a doctor convince me to write a book I didn't want to write, but I did it because I promised him. And I guess it was therapeutic. I never went back to read it or anything. And I always recommend that nobody reads it because it was so horrible. And I got to the point where everybody got older, and all these things that had happened all became like understandable. I knew what the words were to what was wrong with everybody. So I kind of focused more on because of they were ill. And I got to the point where I actually forgave my brother. I hadn't talked to him, but in my mind, as I was writing, I actually forgave him for everything but throwing me out the window and trying to kill me, all the little in-between stuff, because I understood why he did it. And I'm just like, you know, at a point now where the past is so far beyond, and the method that I use to get where I am, though different than yours, I mean, you've actually gotten to a place where it sounds like, you know, it's an excellent job what you were doing. I'm sorry you wasted a lot of money. I can see you have, you know, you've got the brain. You probably would have figured this out on your own anyway. You know, it just kind of steered you in a direction.
I don't know.
Well, that was in you. They brought it out. That's all.
I had to find it, you know. I'm a good reader. I have to find it.
You did a good job. Yeah.
But there's so
you.
Much more. Like, honestly, there's so much more. What I really understood was that, you know, like this lack of self-confidence. Oh, my gosh. This still haunts me today. I struggle with that one a lot. But I have so much more appreciation for my body, because I used to hate myself and hate my body and hate, you know, he would tell me that he would, because I'm kind of fat, right? So he would tell me that he was going to get a knife and cut off all my fat on my body when I was like 12 years old.
And, people pay to have that procedure done.
Well, that's right. But like I hated my body, you know, I hated, and I'm sure other people who've gone through any kind of physical abuse, you know, or sexual abuse, like you get to a stage, like you hate your body because your body has made these bad things come to it, right? And one of the things that I did do was, I think the very first step that I really made to start to heal, to really start to heal, was I had to stop being so defensive and I had to start being open. And I learned that the body and the mind are so connected. So I didn't really have that knowledge or understanding before, how connected they were. You know, so I call it physiological. It's physiological. Whatever happens in your brain happens in your body, because your brain is making your body do it, right? So in order to get over that defensiveness, I had to use my body to stand up, put my hands by my side, facing out, and I stood up as tall as I could and said, I am open, whenever I was about to go and learn something new from anybody, didn't matter who it was. I had to stop not letting anybody in or not allowing myself to learn and going, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. I had to physically do that. And once I started to do that, I started to appreciate my body and I started to go, oh man, thank you, feet, you know, for taking me down this road. Thank you, legs, you know, for giving me the opportunity to walk places. Thank you, you know, boobs, for allowing me to feed my daughter, you know, things like that, right, when I had my baby. Just silly things. It completely changed how my brain then went on with, you know, how we have those automatic negative thoughts. It changed how my brain started to talk to myself, how I, like, in subconsciously or when we're thinking, you know, oh, I'm so fat and ugly or whatever, right? Then I was going, oh, wow, I'm so glad I have such big boobs to feed this baby, or, you know, I'm so glad I have a nice big butt because it stopped, you know, me from hitting the wall too hard or whatever, you know. I was like, started being really like open, and oh man, that was so hard to do. I was in my, I was almost 40. I think I was 39 when I had to learn that just to get started, you know. And because it's this trauma is so physiological, and it makes us so closed, or at least it made me so closed. You know, I didn't want to listen to anybody. I didn't believe anybody. Everything was stupid, you know.
And what you just said there, though, is the answer for you, and maybe for other people too. See, I get mad at things. That's my defense. If someone, you know, really annoys me, I tell them, get lost, beat it. Or if they get nasty with me, I'll punch them in the nose. That's just how I feel. You know, that's how I am. Because I was trampled on so much as a kid. I won't stand for anyone to abuse me today. Now, what you're doing is you turned all of your life experiences, which are, you know, pretty darn severe here. I have your bio in front of me, okay? And you found a way, when you say you let yourself open, you found a way also to find the positive things in life, okay, and about your body, okay? So even if you're using it in a comical sense, you know, I'm glad I have a nice big butt, or I'm glad I have this or that or whatever, you know, because that, you know, there's good that can come from it. And you started to like yourself. Okay, that's what happened. All of a sudden you started to like yourself and love yourself.
Stop hating. stopped hating myself. And that that was the very beginning of when I started to learn what boundaries were. Because I wasn't like you. I didn't punch other people in the face. I didn't. I had a fear that, I was going to black out and kill someone.
I bet it. I wish I could have.
I used to. I was really afraid I would black out and actually kill someone. And I would literally start to get weak if somebody was physical with me or became like aggressive. And I couldn't handle it at all. And I became very submissive and obedient, and I was the good girl. I was going to be the good daughter, you know, all that, right? So that's what I ended up doing. And so it took years before I even understood what a boundary was or learned how to implement a boundary or how to define a boundary. Like, I couldn't believe it when I would ask other people to help me because I would only ask if I really needed help, and they'd say no. I was like, what? But you don't understand. I really need help, you know. I didn't, because I never said no. I never said no. So just, so that physical act, you know, because it is so physiological for me, was my starting point. That's where it started. I had to be open to learning first. And that physical act of, you know, putting my arms down opened up the pathway to allow me to do that. Because I think if I didn't, because it's physiological, right? It opens your brain and your body are so connected. I wouldn't have been able to learn everything that I needed to learn, and be able to get to a stage where, you know, I could deactivate the triggers and then know what boundaries were and have more respect for myself and be able to understand what it is that I wanted and how I wanted to live my life and how I could do that, you know. I mean, I'm not saying my life became easy by any stretch of the imagination, because, I mean, I did find out, like I said at the beginning, I found out I have ADHD, I am borderline personality, potentially, and I also believe that I'm on the autism spectrum of some sort, and still looking kind of into that, because it seems very interesting. I go, oh, I have that character trait, you know, so you don't always know where it's from.
Let's go
because
back.
So many
let's
of these
go
things,
back. Let's go back a little bit, okay? And then I want to get to the borderline personality disorder. Who said you had borderline personality disorder?
Dr. Sadak at Dalhousie University.
So they did all kinds of tests on you and everything, and they decided that you had possible borderline personality disorder?
He said, I went in to see him. Just to talk about my medication for my ADHD and make sure it was, you know, still right for me and whatnot. Because I wasn't diagnosed with ADHD until I was 52, 50, anyway, older. And so the medication helped with, I didn't even know I had, like, more emotional dysregulation. I thought it was normal because it had been normal for me my whole life, right? This dysregulation, this up and down kind of thing of emotions.
Did they do blood levels on you? Because you're taking,
borderline does. You don't think you do a blood test for borderline personality disorder or ADHD?
Actually, they do.
A blood test.
Right. They take.
Oh, not in Canada.
Okay,
I've been to a few ADHD doctors here, and not one of them has taken any blood.
Okay, but you took other types of medications, okay? So usually they do that, okay? They'll take to see where your levels are at, and that way they can determine, like if you're bipolar, say, your level would be off, I'm just saying, or whatever it might be. I'm having trouble with the borderline personality disorder with you, but that's not my place to say. It's just that I work so much with it.
He said potential. He didn't. He had no interest in seeing me again because I'm functional, right?
Right.
So I've done some.
Okay. All right. That,
yeah,
that's
he
a,
did say potential. He didn't.
Okay. That makes me feel better.
It was because he said in order to diagnose you, like, it takes a long time and, you know, you need to do a lot of whatever tests, I guess, or different. It takes quite a time. But because I was so functional, he just said, don't worry about it, you know. Doesn't matter.
Well,
just
you're doing just fine on your own, okay? You have found a way, okay, to deactivate your emotions, okay, and so forth, and that keeps you in line. Let me ask you something.
To deactivate the trigger.
Right,
Deactivate the triggers that cause that severe post-traumatic stress reaction.
Right.
And that happened every day, literally every single day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially in a group of people. And if a man was there and he was going to walk up to me, oh, my God, that was it. Or if I saw a blonde guy, done. Or if, you know, or if a police officer started to walk up to me or even just walk towards me for whatever reason on the street, and or a manager of a store, anything. that was a big one. That was a big one. I agree with you. I would say that the connection of my brain thinking that the trauma is going to continue to happen now is gone for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what I think, in my opinion, that's what I think PTSD is. It's your brain going, oh, my God, you know, this person's going to kill you. Like, this is dangerous life. This is a dangerous world. You're going to die. Like, you're going to get hurt. Everything that just happened to you is going to happen to you again.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think PTSD is. It triggers. That's why they say trigger, right? Because it's triggering your brain to think the same thing is going to happen in this situation.
Well,
that's
the trigger
different.
Is trauma, honey. The trauma is what causes the trigger. Let me ask you something. Yes. I know about that. Let me ask you something, just out of curiosity. All these years that this was happening to you, you were going to school, correct?
I went to university. Mm-hmm.
No, I don't mean there. I mean, like, when you were a kid. Let's go back. I want to ask you something. When you were growing up and your brother was a monster, just like my brother was a monster, there's a lot of monster people out there. How did you do in school? Were you able to concentrate, yes or no?
No, I never did well in school, but we moved every year. Sometimes I went to two or three schools in a year. So we moved a lot. I don't know why we moved a lot. I think the longest I was in was in this little tiny town in southern Ontario, or northern Ontario, actually, called Ignace.
Mm-hmm.
I was there for 3 years, went to grades 2, 3, and 4. And then I was in, I don't know, different school for grade 5 and 6. I went to 3 different schools for grade 1. All over the country. Like, we moved a lot. You know, my dad drove trucks for the mining, and then he wanted to go to school, so he went to Lakehead College in Thunder Bay, Ontario. So we were in Thunder Bay in a trailer park, and he was, you know, going to the college there. And then they went back into mining, and we went up to Fort Francis and Timmins, and like, there's all these. We were all over the place. We were in Saskatchewan and Alberta. I mean, the biggest effect, I think, in school, as far as the trauma goes, I think it just made me not, I don't know, because I have ADHD, so I don't know. It's tough to say whether, was it my ADHD that made it so that I couldn't focus, or was it my trauma that made it so I couldn't focus? But I definitely had no interest in focusing. I couldn't sit in my seat. I was fidgety. I had to get up, you know, and I was always in trouble, always. It didn't matter, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, that happens with the ADHD, with the hyperactivity and all that, not being able to sit still and that's what that stands for, with the hyperness. Okay, I was just curious about that. You may very well have ADHD, because I can tell by the way you speak and the way your mind's, you know, you're brr, brr, but you also can have that. That's all right. You can also have that from other things, too, as well. But it's not borderline personality disorder. Okay. I said that.
He was thinking, I remember he was, he asked me when I went into Dr. Sadek here at Dalhousie University. He asked me, you know, so how many friends do you have here, or do you have any friends here, or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we had moved here with my husband from Vancouver. And I said, friends? People are assholes. I don't have any friends.
And he goes, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think.
But look at the life you've lived. Look at the life you've lived. First of all, you're moving around so much that it's hard for kids. You know, when you move so much like that, you can't really make friends. They become acquaintances. And because you're on the go. So it's hard to develop or even to make a friendship. I can understand that. And as far mm-hmm. as people being assholes, that's all right. You can talk any way you want on the show, right? Yeah. As far as they're being assholes, a lot of people are, okay? And I don't have ADHD or any of the other things, a borderline personality disorder. We run into people throughout our life, okay, that are simply not people who we should be with. Many times we have trouble choosing right partners. Many times we have trouble choosing friends. Many times we have trouble with our social skills, okay, because we have been through so much trauma. A lot of us just want to go and hide. Now, I became, you know, I was very inward, and then all of a sudden I became like an outward person where people say, shut up, you know what I'm saying? Because my mind goes like this at times, and I don't have ADHD. It's just that it's a mechanism, because we have so much information stored in our mind. But I have learned over the years I'm going to use the word separate myself from my emotions when it comes to the past. Because if you live with that fear, that anger, that sadness, all the things that it gives you when you go through so much trauma, it absolutely affects you for the rest of your life. And I'm trying to have a normal life. So all those people, many, many people, whether it be in the family or outside of the family, who attacked me, okay, well, I'll use the word attack because that's what it is, crimes against children, all right? Those people were no good, and that doesn't mean that I'm no good, and most of them are dead, and I'm pretty sure they're in hell because I believe in hell, okay? I really do. And I am... Children are a gift from God. So if you abuse children, then you're going to end up in hell, honey. That's where you're going. And that's fine with me. So that's the way I think. To me, that's like, justice has been done because that's where they are, okay? And someday I'll have to stand before God because I'm not perfect either, all right? But, I don't go around hurting people. But I think with yourself, you've come to a way of truly dealing with all of the problems that you had to face as a child. And if you're able to forgive your brother, I think you said you were able to. Were you? I think you said that. Yes or no?
I don't. I have a different belief system about that. I don't believe we have to forgive our perpetrator. I believe we have to forgive ourselves for how we abused ourselves. Because of the perpetrator. And that's where I believe the forgiveness lies. Not in them. I mean, you can go through the 12 steps and you go through the whole, laundry, the history, right? You go through the history and your heritage and your pain and suffering that's been passed on through generations and understand it. And that was a good journey. It didn't solve my problem, though, you know? The biggest thing that I really wanted to understand was how to live, right? How do I live? Because I never learned how to look for character traits in people, what kind of character traits in people, or how I was supposed to know to trust someone. I never learned that I had a right to boundaries. My body was somebody else's toy, and I was told that I should let him do whatever he wants to it.
I went through the same thing. I get it.
Right? I didn't learn that. Mm-hmm. So I had to go to books and different programs, and I even saw a shaman when I was in Vancouver to learn what a boundary was and how to set it and how to fit it in. I had to learn how to make a decision that was good for me. I had no idea. I wasn't taught any of that. I had to learn how do you plan and organize something to achieve what you want. I was just like a bull in a china shop. I just went and, okay, I'm going to university. I went to university. I'm going to work 80 hours a week and this job and that job, and I'm going to make it happen, and I'm going to, you know, you do it all. You're hyper-vigilant, like you said, and you push yourself forward. I never learned any of that, but I learned it now. Now I can sit down and plan and organize and know when it's a good decision that I'm making for me, because now I have a process to do it.
Right.
Or even relationships that meet my needs. You know, I was always so lonely. And like you say, you know, that always those songs, the 70s songs, right? Looking for love in all the wrong places. I didn't have any idea how to find a partner or a relationship that was going to suit my needs, because I was just desperately searching for anyone, because I didn't have anyone, because we moved so much. We were never anywhere long enough for anybody in the neighborhood to recognize or understand that there was something wrong going on,
right?
be able to go to your parents and say, hey, you know, Your daughter's running down the street with blood pouring out of her head, right? Like, you know.
Lord Jesus, yeah.
Or anything, right? They don't, because there's, you know, you're not there. So I didn't know how to choose people, you know, that were going to be good for me, or even know what that would look like, right? I didn't know what intimacy was. Intimacy was, I thought, was sex. I didn't know. I didn't know it was something different than that, or that I had the right to choose who could be intimate with me, right? Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, will you take me tonight? Instead of, you know, I don't think I want you tonight. Like, you know what I mean? That whole flipping everything around, you know, or having that fear of authority. Like, oh, you know, that was, or how I expressed authority, you know, and how people with authority had over me. I didn't know that. I feel like people, like in my situation, I didn't learn any of that. And when people are in situations like that, whether, like you say, you're being physically abused, mentally abused, emotionally abused, you're not learning those core competencies, those basic life skills that we need. And I feel like it should be free for everyone, you know, free education for everyone. Like, I would love to just share it all, you know, for free. But, I mean, I did develop this course, and I just want to share exactly the techniques, like exactly the step-by-step procedures in how to do all of those things, how to know who to trust, what character traits to look for. How to know, you know, okay, you don't trust this person with your kids, and you don't trust them with your car, and you don't give them money, you don't do this, right? Now you can bring them into your, you know, trust or teach them how, right, after they exhibit, you know, character traits. You don't bring a man home the first night you meet him, or a woman, or whatever, right, because you don't know what they're like or what they're going to do, that kind of thing,
that you've come into touch, okay? I like to slow you down a little bit, let you take a deep breath. You've come into touch. Now that you need to do that. It's good for you. You've come into touch with, you know, all of your feelings and today, you know what's right, you know what's wrong, even in, you know, in relationships and all this other stuff that you're talking about. You just said it. You have boundaries. There are boundaries, and there should be boundaries in life. And that's even for our own good, okay? And we have to have boundaries too. So, you know, you've come a long ways on your own. Now, you claim you didn't get much from the therapist and all this other stuff that you went to. Okay, some do, some don't. So you found your own way of living your life and coming in touch with who you are, and that's very good, okay? I'm proud of you for that. Because what you were talking about would be enough to make someone really totally fly off the handle, which would probably be me, all right? If I had to drink urine, I think I'd lose it, all right? Let's put it that way. And some of the other things you were talking about. Oh, yeah. Lord Jesus. Look, I'm not here to be abused, okay? But I had to get to that point. I had to get to that point because I took it for too long. I took it in my childhood because I had no one to help me, and I took it in the partners that I chose because I had no one to help me. But then I got tough all of a sudden, really tough, and that's where the anger started to come out. And that's okay because it helps me to be a stronger person. I wouldn't actually hit my brother in the head with a baseball bat. Well, maybe I would. I don't know. He was really bad. Yeah. And he got away with everything, all right? Yeah, not just with me. Kids, whatever. Yeah, screwball.
Yeah, so with you too, right? Your brother got away with it. Yeah,
he did.
That's terrible. Yeah. I know.
And no one cared. In fact, my mother told me that this happens in families, because I did tell her, and that was the end of it.
Oh, my God. That's
so, you know, I mean.
That's terrible.
Yeah. So you see, we go through all of these things. We all go through all of these things. And for you to come out at the end okay is amazing.
I feel like it's definitely like, oh, my God, 180-degree, you know, turnaround from what I was, because I was a mess. I mean, oh, my gosh. I didn't know what was happening to me. I felt like I was. Some alien was taking me, you know, taking over all the time, and I couldn't manage at all. But I mean, what is amazing at this later age in life, you know, I met this amazing man. I followed all my prescriptions, you know, like as far as how to find, you know how to trust someone, and I put him to the test, and how to know whether to bring him in my little boundary, my trust circles, you know. And I put him to the test with that, too. And, you know, it took us a year of dating before we said, okay, we're good. Like, I trust you. I know you, you know. And being open and asking, being able to ask him about his finances.
That's
a big
good.
One.
That's
a lot of people get married and they don't know each other's finances even. You know, they don't know anything really about each other. They're just like, oh, we're in love. And I would never have had the confidence to do that, but that's a boundary, right? Saying, well, if we're going to get married, I need to know your credit score. I need to know your assets.
Yeah.
I need to know your debt, right? And I did not have those feelings of like, oh, my God, I'm not allowed to ask that. I shouldn't ask that. You know, it's all secret and private. And every time I was in that feeling, you know, before I learned what these actual core competencies, like these actual skills, it was terrible. So thank gosh, you know, thank whomever, Allah, whatever.
Yeah. Well, you've
God,
done
whoever.
A good job.
Thank God
you've
I learned that. And
you've done a good job.
You know,
let me
nice.
Slow you down.
Found an
let
amazing guy.
Down. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
We're working together.
Listen
nice.
To me, the show is almost over. Okay?
Yeah.
I mean, it went that fast. Didn't I tell you it would go fast?
Very.
Yeah. Yes. So before the show goes over, and I think you've done an amazing job, like I said, and I'm glad that you're happy today. And you have a little girl, too, you said, didn't you?
Well, she's 30 now.
Well,
oh, 29.
Okay.
She's 29.
Okay.
I won't age her.
Time goes by so fast, doesn't it? I know.
Oh.
Anyway, I want to put Lori on from PA real quick and see if Bill would like to say goodbye to you. And Philip, many times he likes to listen, so that's okay. And so let me put Lori on. Go ahead, Lori.
I think that having ADHD is not a bad thing at all because you get a lot more done, you know. So that's how you have to look at it. And the list that
I think
the
it
other
saved
thing,
my life.
It probably did. The one thing that I do have to say is not to let all these diagnoses and everything else define who you are, because you are really something else.
Yeah. I agree.
No, I don't.
I agree.
I'm curious about them, though. I find I'm very more, like, analytical about it, and I'm very curious, like, oh, I do this thing. What is that? You know, where does that come from? Is it trauma? Is it ADHD? Is it BPD or is something else? You know, I'm always very curious about my little quirks.
Well, you're doing fine with your little quirks, okay? You really are. Thank you for that, Lori. And let's go to Bill real quick so he can say goodbye because my clock is 9:34. I think it's off by about 5 or 10 minutes, so. Bill, are you there? Let me open up his mic. Oops. I know he's there. Okay, there you are.
Now I'm unmuted.
Yeah, I know.
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, go ahead.
I want to thank you very much, Laura, for being here with us tonight. Really special, you know. Laura is an hour ahead of you, Carol. I don't know if you know that, but there's a fifth time zone in North America, and it's hanging out in the Atlantic Ocean. That's where she's calling from.
So yeah, I know. I
it's
heard
an hour later.
Well, I'm so glad she came
on. That's the dedication it takes, and we do have people, Laura, from places like Europe and, you know, Israel and so forth, but and down under. long as you can, you're awake during the time we do the show, you just have to figure out what time it is in your place, and you can come on. Anybody can. And that's all it is. It's be awake and ready to call the number, and you're in. So, Laura, you're now a card-carrying member of the NASCA family, and we're delighted to have had you, and thank you very much for having shared your story with us. So God bless you.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm thrilled. I'm sorry. I hope I didn't talk your head off.
No.
No,
that's okay.
You did well.
Yes. Yes. And, Philip, would you like to say good night?
Good night, everybody.
Okay. And next time, I'll get you to talk. Yes, I will. Yes, I will. I don't know. But anyway, he listens many times, and, hey, he learns from that. That's good. So we had a wonderful guest tonight, and I like her technique in the way that she has gotten on her healing journey. And for her, it works very good. In fact, if I was you, I would take notes as to how you go about what you do. So that maybe, because you were mentioning that you would like to maybe make sort of like a little workshop or something, and then you'd have something to offer people, you know, like make a list of things of how you do it. You know what I'm saying?
I do. It's Serenity Now Foundations. If you Google Turn Your Demons into Puppies, my website comes up. It's a course, and it's ready to go.
Okay, that's good. That is good. Yeah. I kind of figured so. That's good. Because it is a little different than like Lori says, she's old school, and I am too in a sense, although I keep up with everything, I do a lot of research. So I knew what you were talking about, and evidently it's quite good because look at you. You're good. All right, you did well. So you got this, all of these steps together, and to teach people how to do it is a very good thing. I think it's important. So good for
Nobody tells us how to do anything anymore. They all want us to figure it out on our own. It drives me nuts, Carol.
I hear you.
Just tell me how to do it. Tell me what to do and how to do it. I'll do it.
I hear you. And what you said, just put it down on paper, get it all together. You said it's all ready to go now anyway. Let us know. I'm going to call you back. Okay, I want you to come back, say maybe about, 6 or 7, 8 months, and see how you're doing with this, if you got yourself, together with this thing that you're formulating, because I think it's good. It's good.
Oh, it's finished. I'm marketing it now.
Well, that's
it's finished.
Wonderful.
It's ready to go. It's beautiful. We've got the YouTube channel. My husband's got Twitter going. The problem is I run another business, right? I also have my bread and butter business. And if I could just teach the world this my whole life, I mean, this I believe is my life's purpose, is to share these techniques and tools. I do. But, you got to make a living at it, right? So until I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, how about if I check back? Okay, our show is over. So how about if I check back with you in about, 6 months or something, and maybe you'd like to come on once you have it all together and you feel comfortable with it, and maybe it's something you could send NASCA as another way of people learning how to heal, okay? It's something that they could learn.
I would love to.
Okay, so we've got your number, And you can come on anytime you want, Monday through Friday, all right? You know what time it is. Here is it. Come on. And, yeah, listen to any show, all right?
Thank you so much, Carol. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate it.
Oh, you're
much.
Welcome. Good night now. Good night, everybody. Thank you very much. God bless.
Good night now.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Good night. Good night.
Blog Talk Radio.
Do an episode. There we go. Okay.